Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. That's what we have here today, Kyle. That's what we've earned here today. I got no more. That's all I could do.
That was really strong.
Thank you.
And it was topical?
I didn't want to tell you that I was going to do that to start out the show, but
no,
I had that plan.
Threw me at first. Well, your accent was so good. I thought you were playing the sound to open.
Did you?
I was like, cool, I guess we're doing that.
You literally thought I was Kurt Russell?
Yeah, for like a split second.
Stephen Langford and Kyle Madsen are in with you up until 4 o'clock today. You may know me from the pregame show. Work a little bit with Jolo and Dibs. I'm known as Nice Guy Stephen. Ugh. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I hate it. You know, it depends. But we know Kyle Madsen from Bonte Steiny and Guru. You may have heard his voice on the air there as well. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795, 888-957-9570. Of course, if you want to get in on the conversation, we're going to be all over the place today. But the reason I started out that show that way is because it's the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice.
Feels like yesterday.
I remember it like it was yesterday when Team USA beat the Soviets. Mike Ruzioni getting it done as the captain. I mean, Kyle, it's weird because with us, we weren't born in 1980. We were born a little bit after that. We weren't alive to see the Team USA beating the Soviets. So when it comes to shows like this, we are going to go down memory lane a little bit later on in the show, but,
yeah.
You know, for sports fans, it's one of the most memorable moments in sports of all time. And you and I, it feels like we only have you just mentioned this before the show, we only have the movie to actually go off of. We don't have the actual moment.
Yeah, man. Like, I rely a lot on, I could listen to people who experience that live.
Right.
I could listen to them talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
And it's one of those moments, it was so transcendent that I feel like I experienced it, even though my folks were 10 years younger than I am now when
right.
it happened.
Can you live vicariously through people in
yeah,
the past?
No, seriously, I think so, because the movie Miracle did a terrific job of portraying that game and the way it was played. Like, they go through and there's footage of them trying to recreate the hockey as close as humanly possible.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like I've experienced it, but it's obviously so much different from people that I actually have.
Right.
So I'd love to hear from people.
We need to hear from people. You know what? Like, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Warriors coming up. Kind of the state of all the three major sports right now. They seem to be in completely different places. But 888-957-9570, if you did experience watching the Miracle on Ice back in 1980 on February 22nd and would just love to get your reaction with all of that. We'll be taking those sort of calls for the entire four-hour show. But I did want to start off with the Warriors. And I think, look, we've been trying to just try and to find silver linings in this entire season because, look, it's a 12-win team. I mean, there's really only so much you can have to go off of. You got the Andrew Wiggins trade, and we can see how he develops with this Warrior team throughout the rest of the season. But for the most part, the season is lost. However, when you look at the bottom of these conferences, the bottom seeds, I mean, at least within the bottom five, when you're looking at teams like the Timberwolves in the Western Conference, and you're looking at the Cavs, the Hawks, the Knicks, and even the Pistons, I mean, I would rather be the Warriors than a majority of these teams that are in the bottom five, bottom six in these leagues.
Yeah, I think that's right. I might put the Hawks ahead of Golden State. Just because of how young their core is. But it's not like Steph Curry's 38 right now and has 1 or 2 years left. I think he has probably 2 or 3 years of really good basketball left. I think Klay Thompson's game is going to age really well. And then if Andrew Wiggins fits the way they want him to fit,
yeah,
that changes everything. But the sample size we have of Andrew Wiggins right now, both in and out of a Warriors uniform, isn't great looking 5 years down the road. If he's going to be a 22-point guy, pretty inefficient, taking too many mid-range jumpers, not a great three-point shooter, doesn't try all the time,
right?
That's going to be an issue.
But I feel like we haven't seen that so far in the tenure for Andrew Wiggins. Like defensively, half of it, I mean, you could put whatever percentage you want on it, but to play defense, you got to put in the effort. And you could say 50% of it is just effort alone. The other 50% is being smart, being like a Draymond, having that high basketball IQ. But as far as the 50% of effort is concerned for Wiggins so far, I feel like we've at least seen that effort from him.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely been instances where, and I mean, it's a what, 5-game sample size, 4 or 5-game sample size, where you watch and it's like, is he even playing? Like, is Andrew,
right.
But it's not as many instances as I was expecting it to be. So that's a good sign for the future for sure. But with the Hawks, you have Trae Young, who is kind of a disciple of Stephen Curry. Not as good of a shooter, but I think maybe a better all-around playmaker. Trae Young's really good.
It's crazy watching him now.
He's fantastic.
He was, when he was coming out of Oklahoma, I don't think that many, like, people knew he could shoot the three and he could shoot it from deep, but I don't think they expected him to be that all-around player that he is right now.
Yeah, that was what, well, when I first watched him, that was what stood out the most, is like his playmaking, just with the ball in his hands, his vision and his passing. DeAndre Hunter's having a really good rookie year. John Collins is good. Kevin Herter's really good. I really like the core of guys there. Now, the big difference here is the Warriors' organizational just infrastructure is, I think, vastly superior to the other four teams you mentioned, which if you're just taking the team organization as a whole, like you're taking Golden State over not just those four teams, but a bunch of teams in the NBA.
Right.
I trust these guys. I trust Bob Myers and Joe Lacob to put people in positions to succeed.
And you know, I feel like it's way too early as far as, you know, Andrew Wiggins is concerned. We're always talking about how the Warriors are always looking ahead, always looking ahead. I genuinely believe that Andrew Wiggins is a part of their future, because there was some talk that this was kind of the same sort of thing when D'Angelo Russell was on the Warriors, when you had Russell and immediately you already had the report that the Warriors are going to be looking to trade him by the February deadline. And you're like, what? I mean, come on, you got to give him a chance. And then it ended up actually happening. But there are some who think that Wiggins, I mean, there's a possibility that he might not even play with Steph and Clay and Draymond on the floor by next year, because they could put him in a trade package to try and acquire some sort of big name.
But the only way I think that Wiggins becomes valuable enough to include in a package for, I'm going to pick the biggest name and say Giannis. Let's just say that's the goal. The only way he becomes valuable enough to include in that trade with probably another player or two and some picks, like, is if he plays with Steph and Clay and succeeds at a higher level than he's ever succeeded before in the NBA.
You think that's the type of thing that they would need to get a guy
like
Giannis?
Absolutely. Right. You can't just take Wiggins as he is, because if that was the case, Minnesota would have packaged him for something more than D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
But he has to show in Golden State that he is a better player than he was in Minnesota. And I think the only way he's going to be able to do that is if he gets a healthy sample size of games in with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
See, now, when I'm looking at these teams that we mentioned, though, like the bottom five, like, look, when you're looking at the Western Conference, you're looking at the Timberwolves and the Warriors. Those are the bottom two. Then you got the Suns, the Kings, and then the Pelicans and the Spurs, who are upwards of 20 wins. Then you go to the Eastern Conference, and it takes until you get to the ninth seed with the Wizards until you actually get 20 wins. So when we're looking at these bottom teams, though, when we're looking at teams like the Knicks, the Hawks, the Cavs, and the Timberwolves, I think the one thing that they don't have going forward in the future is that they have these starting lineups, right? They got they're working around, like you mentioned, the Hawks starting lineup with all these young guys. Sure, they're building it into something big, but one thing we've seen as Warriors fans is, I mean, not only did KD help with this whole dynasty, you know, with the two championships in a row, but when they got their first championships, I think the main thing that we kind of went unnoticed was the depth that they had on the team.
Sure.
And I feel like as far as you got, when you got Wiggins, when you got Steph, when you got Clay, when you got Draymond, I mean, maybe they're trying to work in Kevon Looney to be that starting center. He's still got a long way to go coming back from that injury, which was totally mysterious, by the way. No idea.
Very strange.
Like you know, I heard there's a what even was the it was a problem with like the nerves or something like that. Like there's something completely out of my pay grade to even discuss. So I don't know what it's like coming back from that. But I feel like as far as the draft picks that they do have, I mean, they can keep the top five, whatever lottery pick they're going to have this season. But, I mean, they just traded away Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson for 3 second-round picks. They got a second-round pick for Willie Cauley-Stein. They're going to be flipping those for depth. So I feel like in the future, they got their starting lineup, which is set, which is full of guys who may be veterans, but also they're setting themselves up to grab some guys who could come off the bench, grab some defenders from the wing. Like I feel like in the future, if you're looking at it next season, you would have been okay if Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson were your guys coming off the bench. But I feel like they can get another pair of guys like that.
Yeah, whether it's trading or just like throwing darts at the wall and using all these second-round picks, that's cheap talent. If you happen to stumble across a guy in the second round who can give you 18 minutes off the bench, that's enormous. Like, that's how you open and extend championship windows. And the Warriors, like, whether they're planning to move those picks or whether they're planning to just, like I said, have more arrows to shoot, they need those cheap guys who are going to be productive. And you can find those veterans, you can find buyout guys, sure, but I think those draft picks are really what they're going to look to try and kind of restock this cupboard in the post-Curry-Thompson era. I don't think it's not imminent. It's not next year or the year after. But when you talk about the Warriors as an organization are constantly looking ahead, I think that's what you've got to start preparing for. And I think that begins with that depth you talked about.
Right. And when we're looking at the Eastern Conference, too, because we mentioned the Hawks, they could be up that you could choose between either or with who you'd want within the next 3 years. But when you're looking at these other teams in the Eastern Conference, though, I mean, the Cavs, the Knicks, the Pistons, the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls got a few young players, but we don't know where they're going right now. The Hornets, the Wizards, the Magic. And you got to wait for Kevin Durant to be on the floor with Kyrie Irving at the same time to really make some judgments on the Nets. But when you look at the top six teams, you'd maybe want to be you'd want to be the Pacers, the Sixers, the Heat, the Celtics,
sure,
the Raptors, and the Bucks going forward, sure. But other than that, I'd be happier being a Warriors fan right now than most of those teams in the Eastern Conference.
Well, when you look league wide, we have the teams we mentioned. We have the Cavs, Hawks, Wolves, Knicks. But then next is the Pistons. I'd way rather be the Dubs than the Pistons right
for
now.
For sure.
Then it's the Bulls, the Hornets, the Wizards, the Suns. Maybe the Suns. I'll give them another couple years.
Yeah.
But like I said, just organizationally. And then after that, it's the Kings. Like, I would take the Warriors and what not only the core they have, but I would take them down the road just based on what we've seen, their ability to build a contender and now rebuilding a contender. Some of these other teams have not had contenders in the time that the Warriors have been good.
Right.
So I know light years has kind of become a joke, but it feels like that's where the Warriors, compared to the rest of these bottom 10 or so teams in the NBA, it feels like that's where they're at.
They've just been trying to work around their draft picks and hope that it works out. I do want to mention something comparing the Eastern Conference to the Western Conference, but Vincent Lafayette has been waiting patiently on hold, 888-957-9570, if you want to get in on the conversation. Just talking about which team you'd rather be within the 3 years, and it seems like you'd rather be the Warriors than a lot of these teams in the NBA. But Vincent Lafayette, what's going on, Vince?
Yeah, I think Omar Spellman could be coming back to the Warriors because I heard that I was reading in Minnesota's webpage. They dropped him down in the D League. They were planning to cut him, and they found out his contract's guaranteed. He signed for next year because they picked up the contract, his rookie thing, or second year player. So he signed for like $2-something million. I bet you they could flip one of those late picks that they have for Omar at the end of the season, because I think Minnesota wants to get rid of him. And that would be your backup center right back, because I think he fit pretty good. And the second thing is Robinson could be coming back to the Warriors as well as a backup when his season's over with the Sixers, because I'm not sure if the Sixers are going to sign him or not, but we'll see how that goes. So a couple of those players could be coming back that we saw in the last year. And then the other thing is, I'm wondering what the Warriors are going to do. Let's say they get really, really lucky and they get the first pick in this year's draft. Do they take Wiseman, who's the center, or do they go after somebody like LaBall and you know, that's a spot that, you know, might replace Curry in 3 or 4 years? That, I'm not even sure even the Warriors know what they're going to do yet. You haven't heard anything about that at all?
Appreciate the call, Vince. For one, we'll get to the draft in a little bit here, but Omari Spellman, I love the effort that I was a big fan of Omari Spellman when he was here with the Warriors. Yeah. Big fan of the effort that he put in, always played with energy, and always seemed to be just a positive all-around dude.
I rock with guys who lose weight to play professional sports.
For sure.
I guess hard to do.
For sure. And I just don't know like what he is as a basketball player.
And
it wouldn't be backup center.
And like, I think that's goes for Glenn Robinson III as well. Like, Glenn Robinson III was a nice piece on this team, but if you're trying to build a championship team, is that the guy you want as your seventh or eighth guy? I don't know if that's the case.
Right. It was just, that's what I always found weird about the Omari Spellman kind of the experiment with him. It's just like, where, like, he could score from the mid range every now and then. He could shoot the three every now and then. But other than that, I didn't really know what he was.
Now, if like a guy like Marquese Chriss, to me, is the kind of player, like what he's shown this year has been enough that you can see him getting real minutes on a good team, and not 35 minutes a night. But if he's a rotational big for you, where he can play the four or the five, and he's blocking shots and he's playing defense without fouling, something he's done this year better than he has ever, not only is that a good sign for him and his ability to play for the Warriors if they're competing for championships, but that's just good for the Warriors' player development, because when you look at the last half decade, who's the last player they took and just really developed?
Right.
It's the cupboard's pretty bare in that regard.
I mean, when you're talking about the players that they just straight up develop, I mean, I guess one you could look for is a big man in JaVale McGee. They kind of resurged his career, but I don't know if he kind of is developing.
Even then, right. They found a role for him where it's like, hey, you're going to rim run, you're going to catch lobs, and you're going to jump around inside.
Right.
And I think that's Marquese Chriss could be a little bit better version of that, because Marquese Chriss is still, what, 22?
Yeah.
So JaVale McGee came over here when he was older. He had had a long career and, you know, old habits die hard.
Was just known about Shaq than a fool guy. Shaq and champion.
That's literally what he was known for. And I think Marquese Chriss has a chance to be a lot better than that, because he is so early in his career. But I think the Warriors, similar thing. Like, they have a role for him. They're going to take a skill set. They're going to maximize it. And when you talk about Omari Spellman, I'm with you. I don't know exactly where, maybe is like a stretch five that you play here and there in spurts. But when you talk about the future of the front court for the Warriors, I really think, like, when they signed Marquese Chriss, I was producing Bonte Steine and Guru, and we kind of like laughed about it. Like, hey, did we hit the breaking news sounder for Marquese? Like, it was kind of like, hey, this is funny. He's on a non-guaranteed deal. He probably won't even make the team. And then he makes the team, and then he performs well. So I think when you talk about those guys that are on the team this year that can actually make an impact moving forward, that's a guy I'm looking at.
You been in the lab?
Dude, I've been in the lab.
You've been in the lab?
He's been in the lab.
There you go. Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention about the Western Conference, though, is you take the Warriors over a majority of these teams in the Eastern Conference, but when it comes to the Western Conference, I don't know if that's the case. And that's what has me slightly skeptical about this whole notion that once Steph comes back, once Klay comes back, once Draymond comes back, sure, they'll be able to at least get an 8 seed and they'll make it to the playoffs, but I'm not really buying the notion that they're going to get straight back to, you know, the conference final. Like, I don't really, because I'm looking at the Western Conference right now, it seems like the Lakers are set up to be pretty good, the Nuggets are set up to be good, the Clippers, you don't know what they're really even going to be because their guys just keep on taking time off or keep getting injured. The Jazz are set up to be You don't know what the Jazz are, but they're set up to be pretty good too. The Rockets, the Thunder, the Mavericks, and the Grizzlies with Ja Morant, and the Trailblazers, you can never count them out when you got Dame Lillard there, and you hope that they can get Nurkic back and Zach Collins as well, just because you need Dame Lillard to get those big guys there, and you like Dame Lillard so much, or at least I do. But, I mean, that's what has me a little skeptical about this notion that, yeah, I mean, they're going to get straight back into finals contention as soon as all those guys come back.
It doesn't seem that easy, right?
It doesn't.
Because it's like Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Okay, even if they're playing, I don't think Steph's going to win another MVP. I don't think I'm breaking news saying that.
Right.
But even if he's playing at a high level, like an all-NBA type of level, and you get Clay in that kind of third-team all-NBA conversation, Draymond's in that defensive player of the year conversation, like those three guys are enough to get you to the postseason. But the Warriors' depth, like you said earlier, is what really carried them and elevated them above the rest of the league. That there was never a lineup where, I mean, Kerr experimented with some lineups that weren't great, but there was always somebody on the floor who was really dangerous. And when you're in a position where when Steph sits and you just have nobody to run the point effectively,
right?
Or when Clay is out, they can just run a box and one. That's why Wiggins is so vital, I think. He has to start hitting threes. He has to start moving off the ball. And if he can do that, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, now the Warriors are cooking with gas. Because if you have those three guys, Steph, Clay, and Draymond, healthy, playing at a high level, and then you bring in a guy like Wiggins to really be that fourth key guy, now you can start mixing and matching where having really high-quality bench players isn't as necessary.
Right.
But you still need your Sean Livingston type of guy who can be that backup point guard who plays defense effectively. He's rangy. You have your Iguodala. You have your backup bigs. They always had a big rotation with Bogut or Festus Ezeli, or, I mean, pick a name.
You could even throw Spates into that
conversation. Yeah, Mo Spates, same thing. Right. Just these guys who it's like, okay, they weren't great, but like you had to respect what they were doing within their role in Golden State. So identifying guys who can play specific roles and putting them in a position to succeed in those roles, I think, is going to be really key, and more key, I think, than Steph, Clay, and Draymond, because I think they're going to come back and be really good.
They will be. I think it's a given for sure, but also it's just like the one team I didn't even mention in the Western Conference is the Pelicans. Woof. I mean, Zion, he looks like Khalil Mack, like,
dude,
out there.
He is, and the Pelicans are one of those teams where it's like the organizational infrastructure, I don't trust it. But, like, Brandon Ingram's really good. Like, Brandon Ingram looks better this year than he's ever looked.
Right.
Zion Williamson already looks better than advertised. And if Zion's going to stay healthy and you're going to have Brandon Ingram turning into Walmart brand Kevin Durant, like, that's something. That's two really dominant players that you can build around. Jrue Holiday is an excellent point guard. And now they're in a position where they start needing to fill bench spots. And the Pelicans are a team that when you look forward, I have a really hard time believing they won't be in championship contention.
Man, could they make the playoffs this year? I mean, you're looking at the Pelicans got 24 and the Blazers are at the ninth seed right now and they got 25. So really, that's all up for grabs right now, getting to the eighth seed. The Grizzlies got 28 wins. So, I mean,
the Pelicans are four back with 26 games to go. That's tough.
Man. Could see it happening,
though. And you don't have Zion playing 30 plus minutes a night.
The way he's able to seal guys off, dude, when he is able to get into the post and just totally knock out whatever guy is trying to defend him.
It's unbelievable.
The video that went viral on social media yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? I think it was yesterday, or this morning, rather, was Melo kind of like giving him a deep two in the mid-range, and he was shaking and baking him, just not even move. He's just only working with his pivot foot, not even trying to move the basketball. And then he made the two, and then everyone's like, oh, Melo teaching the young guy a lesson.
Yeah.
Then you forget that, oh, wait, Zion scored 19 in the first half of that game. Like, yeah. He did his job. Ram in Los Gatos wants to talk about the Warriors' needs. Of course, 888-957-9570 if you want to get in on the conversation, as Stephen Langford and Kyle Madsen are with you. What's going on, Ram?
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Can hear you well.
Yes.
All right. Well, I totally agree with your conversation about having the veteran backups like Livingston and Iguodala. I'm excited about that. They're starting six or seven of next year, but I think what they're really missing is that strength and numbers component that they had for the last 5 years. And they really need that just veteran, high IQ player coming off the bench with, like, a very good locker room presence. And, of course, having, like, the length of Livingston and Iguodala. I can't think of a backup point guard right now that would fit that position, but, man, I would have loved to have Jarrett Jack in this position, too, that they had back in the day. And just someone that can come off the bench, drop some buckets, and then just provide a good locker room presence from a veteran standpoint.
Appreciate the phone call, Rob. You know, I don't know if Kai Bowman is that guy, but I like watching him play. I like watching Kai Bowman play on defense. He's a good defending point guard. I don't know if he's that scorer that with like a Jarrett Jack who can just straight up score from the mid-range whenever he wants. But I like Kai Bowman. I don't know if he is that backup point guard, though.
Yeah,
that's what
I feel like
would,
Kai Bowman's the kind of guy. I feel like Kai Bowman is the kind of guy. No shade to Kai Bowman. He's been fun this year. But if he's playing 25-plus minutes for you,
yeah,
I don't see it. I don't.
You don't like him being like a Quinn Cook type?
Yeah, playing 8 minutes a night. That's fine.
By the way, Carl Landry don't get enough respect.
He does,
here.
Dude. He doesn't. Carl Landry's a gangster.
Let's talk. You want to talk Carl about Landry. The? You know, we got here from the 510. The Warriors develop Looney, Thompson, Green, and Curry. You want to talk?
Oh, I meant beyond those
for sure,
guys.
For sure. But we got that text here. You want to talk about the development of Draymond Green? Carl Landry, son. He helped out a lot.
And Steve Kerr's willingness to put him in the starting line.
There you go. I mean, the reason that Draymond does the flex after he hits an and one, Carl Landry used to do that.
Wow.
Draymond probably, I mean, that's a pretty common celebration, but Carl Landry.
Carl Landry invented flexing. You heard it here on 95.7.
He invented the flex celebration after the and one. We'll continue to discuss the Warriors coming up next and just who you'd rather be in 3 years compared to these other teams. Want to hear from you on the Chilton Autobody text line at 95795, 888-957-9570. Of course, if you want to get in on the conversation, Stephen Langford, Kyle Madsen in with you up until 4 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Stephen Langford, Kyle Madsen in with you up until 4 o'clock. In case you didn't know, I am Stephen from the pregame show from 5 to 6, Monday through Friday, as I throw a shameless plug in there. I'm also the board op for Joe Lowe and Dibs. And Kyle is the producer for Bonte Steine and Guru. And, of course, you've heard him on the mic with them. So we have some familiar voices here. It's not just in the car. It's just like, who are these guys? No, you've heard our voices.
Why would you aggressively say that? Like, when you turn on the radio,
you know.
Don't recognize the voices. Why would you aggressively ask who they are? I found out some very distressing information about you this morning, by the way.
What's that?
That you eat string cheese by just biting the cheese.
Yeah.
And not stringing it off like a normal person.
Like a normal person? Like a normal 12-year-old,
like,
you mean? I'm a man. I jump on the string cheese.
That's unbelievable.
What kind of cheese is it? Is it mozzarella?
I don't know.
Is it provolone?
It's supposed to be string.
We just
string
know it
is
string.
It's not just a brick of cheese, you weirdo. Golly.
Look,
I don't want this to be a tangent. I just needed to bring it up.
I got a couple of more things that I'm going to bring up in a second. We are going to get to the Warriors and just their place right now in basketball.
A person eating string cheese like that is how a serial killer documentary starts.
Really? Have you ever seen a serial killer documentary start out that way? This man bites into a string cheese.
Not yet.
Because I eat it in 3 bites, and then I feed it to my dogs. Possibly feed it to my dogs. Well, it takes you what? Probably like 5 minutes to get through that.
Yeah, get to savor the snack.
Look at that little stick of cheese. No, just I like the pleasure right away. I don't need to peel away the little cheese so I can eat it like that. I just eat straight. I just bite straight into it.
That's crazy.
I can't believe
that
you
is crazy, JD.
You know, you all have such a problem with that, and I don't like it. There's also one more thing that I'm going to mention before we get to the Warriors, but it would have been Steve Irwin's 58th birthday today. I just found that out. So that made me a little sad going into this segment. So I'm going into this with a skewed vision already. But Steve Irwin's 58th birthday. How about that? I was a big Steve Irwin guy back in the day.
That was one of those celebrity deaths. I was 16, 15, 16. And that was one of those ones that really like weirdly hit me.
Yeah, because you don't because you look at him as he's the crocodile hunter, man. He's going up against these gators and these snakes and these spiders, and he's never ever gotten hurt from it, like on TV at least in that way. And then all of a sudden that happens, you're like, wow, I can't believe that Steve Irwin. I mean, I can't believe that happened. So shout out to him. I mean, there's a lot that's been going on today. It's the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice today. So 40 years ago, remember it well. I remember the very day that Team USA took down the Soviets there.
Watching on the tube.
Yeah. And you know, on the 30 for 30, I think it's called Of Miracles and Men.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of takes the side of it takes what the Soviets were thinking, and it takes former players and the commentators and all that sort of stuff to tell their side of the story. And it's funny because you and I, we already mentioned this, but really all we got to go off of is Miracle. We think that Kurt Russell is Herb Brooks. Like, that's all we got.
Yeah. Yeah, we have viewed that growing up as sports fans as this all-time great sports moment,
right,
that has lived through various documentaries and movies and interviews, and my folks still have the newspapers from the next day. It's super cool. But yeah, there's a whole other side.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, are there sports fans in Russia sitting around going, gosh, it still stings.
This is the worst day of their lives, some of them.
Like, game 7 of the 2016 finals is going to be that for me. I'm going to be 97 years old sitting there going, they had a 3-1. Oh!
Yeah.
And it's going to I wonder if that's the case there.
Oh, for sure. The 2016 finals is the perfect sort of
unprecedented collapse.
It was the worst Father's Day of all time. You want to watch that game 7 on a Father's Day? You expect to celebrate your dad? Dad, I don't want to talk to you right now. All right, I'm kind of mad. Kind of like we were supposed to have this entire series down or up 3-1, then that happens. Like, you know, there is a whole other side to it, though, and that's what the documentary opened it out to be, because when you watch the movie, when you watch Miracle, you're looking at the Soviets as, like, the just complete enemy, and you don't even care about their thoughts. But in actuality, they're all human, and these humans experience something that was devastating to them, at least as the hockey fans.
Yeah, the movie does a really good job of showing the Soviet team just kind of standing on the ice, just like befuddled, because they didn't lose ever, much less to a ragtag team of 19 and 20 year old college kids. Check out the scores. I know that we talk about, like, we just kind of know that the Soviets were dominant. Check out these scores in the Olympics prior to them facing the United States.
Hit me with it.
16-0, 17-4, 8-1, 4-2, 6-4. Like, they were just dominating.
So there was an 18 in there?
No, 8.
8?
8-1. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Their first three games, they outscored the opponents 41-5 in hockey.
And from the 408, I'm 52, remember Miracle on Ice. You can't underestimate just the fact that where our, you know,
society
where
was,
we're,
yeah.
Yeah, where we're at politically and all that sort of stuff. But just as a regular hockey fan who maybe didn't have all that going on in there, I mean, maybe it was a different time back in 1980 and everyone kind of looked at, you know, these countries as sort of enemies in a way. Mm-hmm. But also there were some who were just straight up fans of hockey of that team over there in Russia. And they're just like, did we really just blow it to a minor league hockey team?
Right, to our, like, national enemy?
Yes.
Basically, and with the USA, there was the Iran hostage situation was going on.
Yeah.
There were all these just tumultuous things going on in the country. It feels like sports doesn't take over that way anymore, though. Like, it feels like the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey thing kind of dominant, and again, I wasn't there, maybe this wasn't the case, but it feels like in the retelling of the story, like it just kind of overtook all this national tumult that was going on. And it doesn't feel like sports can do that anymore. It feels like if that were to happen today, I don't know even what sport it would happen in. Let's say the United States curling team has this ridiculous, amazing run, and it sweeps the nation. Everybody's rooting for the U.S. curling team. I'm just picking an Olympic sport. It feels like if that happened now, people would go, okay, great, it's just a sport. There's all this other stuff going on.
Right? Like, I mean, Sam just gave it to me in my ear from back there. The U.S. boycotted hockey in the 1980 Olympics, yeah. And that's the reason that they had that team, right?
Yeah.
What? I couldn't even hear what he's saying back there.
Oh, great.
He's trying to talk
good
in
to
my
know.
Ear, but I couldn't even hear it. But
I think it was the 84 games.
Oh.
They boycotted in Moscow.
Oh. Man, we don't even know, because we weren't even alive then at the time in 1980.
Yeah, the U.S. Boycotted the 80 Summer Olympics, but back then they were in the same
right.
year as the
that's
Winter
right.
Olympics.
Got you.
The reason that the hockey team was all minor leaguers was because the NHL wouldn't let them play.
Man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy to think about. 888-957-9570 if you were alive for the Miracle on Ice at that time in 1980, because for us as sports fans in general, it's like this mythical thing which you just don't really expect to happen anymore.
Would you prefer it? So we've talked a lot on Bonte Steininger 10 to 2 Monday through Friday. We've talked a lot about, do you want Steph and Clay to play in the Olympics? The Olympics are coming up in July. Clay has just been ruled out for the rest of the season. Steph has not come back yet, although Steve Kerr said today that Steph scrimmaged and his return is nearing. He's been fully cleared for contact.
They so put him in like, bubble wrap, basically.
Yeah. So it looks like he's going to be coming back. He'll get a couple of months in before the end of the season. Would you prefer it? Like, do you like the fact that the U.S. national basketball team is just kind of an NBA all-star team? Or would you prefer it if it was just like the best college guys? I think that'd be more fun to root for.
You know,
like, but I'll root for anything Team USA.
But we do. It would be a lot of fun to root for sure. But we put a lot of stock, I feel like, into the fact that, especially now, that these players, like, they're gold medal winners. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're talking about the Hall of Fame,
like the resume.
The reason that Carmelo is so well respected, among many other things, one of the better, you know, just offensive players that we've seen in this generation. But one of the reasons he's so respected is because of the amount of gold medals he's won. He's basically Mr. Well, USA.
Olympic Melo was what everyone pointed to when trying to justify him being in the league.
Right.
When he was not in the league last year.
Man.
It's like, look what he did for the Olympic team.
Right.
He's that veteran presence. He hit some threes. He could take over in clutch moments. I agree with you there. I think it would be...
You think it'd be more like a level playing field if they had more college guys go out there? Maybe G League players?
Yeah. I mean, maybe. But it's already not a lock that the U.S. is going to go win it just because the game is so international now and there are so many good players internationally. But I feel like that would be more fun to root for. It's more of an underdog thing where right now if the U.S. doesn't win a gold, it's like, great.
Right.
What a terrible team. Man. But if it wasn't such a like stone cold lock that the U.S. is the favorite by a long shot,
yeah.
I don't know. I think that'd be more fun.
You know, and going back to your original point about Steph and Clay playing in the Summer Olympics, I'm down to watch Steph play because Steph didn't have that terrible injury like Clay had, and Clay's timetable to return was always 8 to 12 months. So you'd be getting him right back on the court. I feel like the risk of aggravating that injury, for me, I'd be nervous watching Clay playing for Team USA. Not so much with Steph. I'm sure I'd be like that with Steph because there's always that sense of, look, I don't want these guys getting hurt in the Olympics. I do feel like as far as comparing Steph and Clay and those two, just with Clay's injury and what he experienced in this last season, I feel like I'd much rather see Steph on the court and I'd be a little less worried than if I were to see Clay on the court.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. Especially if you're a 49er fan and you watched what Jerick McKinnon's gone through the last couple of years, tears his ACL before the 2018 season, tries to come back for 2019 and has aggravates that injury and now he misses all of 2019. Like, that's the last thing you want to see. And I know that injury risk, Steve Kerr said the other day that if you're worried about injuries, why is anybody playing? But for Clay, that's a guy coming off a catastrophic knee injury where it's like the rest is vital to ensure that he is 100% for the NBA season. Whereas with Steph, I'm with you. I think that hand is going to be fine. I think he's going to finish his season, and assuming he finishes it healthy, I have no problem with him going to the Olympics and playing. Like, he's going to be working out anyway, so why not play some games?
Yeah, and you know, it feels like within the NBA realm, Steph has accomplished so much already. you know, two-time MVP, NBA champion, kind of revolutionized the way the game was played in the NBA. He has teams like the Rockets right now putting up 49 threes against the Warriors and shooting for 51%. Without Steph Curry in the NBA, maybe it would have transformed into that, but Steph Curry was definitely at the helm. But this Olympic team thing for him, like, that's just another box that he wants to, like, it feels like he's accomplished enough in the NBA. Anything that adds on to it is like, well, it's
he's a Hall of Famer if he never plays again.
For sure. Yes. For sure. But this U.S. Olympic team thing, never played in that. It's just something to add to his resume that's totally outside of the realm of basketball. I mean, he's already, you know, got the golf going on and you know, playing in pro-ams and stuff. He's doing stuff in other sports. Just feels like for the U.S. Olympic team, for him, Yeah, there'd be just something completely different.
Can I nitpick something you said?
Please.
The three-point revolution definitely would have happened without Steph.
Definitely would have happened, you
think? The Rockets have been first in three-point attempt rate for the last, like, 8 years.
Yeah?
Like, they were going to – they were going to – the analytics on this are pretty complicated, and I want everyone to try and follow this. 3 points is more than two. That's the extent of the analytics.
Right.
So the Rockets were going to do that no matter what. Like, Daryl Morey was gonna figure that out. Whether Steph Curry was launching 35.
Bringing in a guy like Mike D'Antoni, too, who plays twice the offense and half the defense, as the Bleacher Report Game of Zones put it once.
Yeah, no, that's literally what it is.
It's a good point,
I think the Rockets were going to get there regardless of what Golden State did. And the Rockets probably, without Golden State being as good as they were, probably have a ring or two to show for it.
Man. No wonder Houston and Golden State have that little bit of like, I wonder what Rockets fans think. You know, we're always looking at these guys like Westbrook and Harden, and we basically look at them as like the enemy for Golden State. But I don't really know how Houston sports fans feels. I know they probably do not like the team, but for that reason.
Do you remember when Aisha Curry opened her restaurant in Houston?
True.
They're not fans, it turns out.
True.
And that's why this year has been so satisfying as a Warriors fan, because it feels like people go, yeah, people really want to stick it to the Warriors. It's like, great. You're sticking it to Kai Bowman and Marquise Chris.
Man.
Like, good job.
Putting already bad Yelp reviews on an international smoke that hadn't even opened in Houston yet, that is pretty next
that's
level.
That's super right, and that just shows, like, the Warriors and the Currys live in Rockets fans' heads free of charge. And I think, like, wouldn't you? Like, that's just the nature of a sports fan. I would hate the Warriors if I was a Rockets fan. Hate them.
It would be the only time that I would actually leave a Yelp review. Yeah, like I wouldn't.
You know how mad you have to be,
like, to actually leave a legit Yelp review.
My team can't beat them, so I'm gonna be mad on Yelp.
Right, like if that's the avenue you feel like you have to go down, that's the only time that I would ever use Yelp in a serious fashion.
Do you know how mad you have to be to angrily type barbacoa?
Let's go to Lefty, who was 14 at the time of Miracle on Ice. What's going on, Lefty?
Jealous.
Hey, fellas. Yeah. Okay. I'm aging myself here. But yeah, I remember that.
It's okay. We love you.
That was one of the biggest moments in U.S. sports history. You guys were talking about the times. I mean, Russia was a Cold War and all that stuff. So there was all this stuff going on, the hostage crisis and all that. And I remember that. I was in a junior high school, and we had heard sometime during the day that the U.S. had beat the Russians. And we're like, no, we didn't even believe it, right? Because I think they had a pre-tournament game. They faced each other, and the Russians killed it. It was like 10-1 or 14-1. It was just an obliteration, because back then, Russia was basically a pro team. You know, they had guys in their 20s and 30s. Yep. And USA and all these other teams, they're just a bunch of college kids, right? And so it was a massive upset. I remember watching it that night, knowing in the back of my head, I had heard we won this game, and I still didn't believe it until it actually happened. It was just, I get goosebumps right now talking about it. At that time, it was so massive just to beat the Russians. It'd be like some college basketball team beating a pro team. That's what kind of an upset it was. And that was only to get to the gold medal game. I think we still had to beat.
Yeah.
I think it was Finland the next game, right?
Yeah, beat Finland 4-2
for the gold medal.
Yep.
But Russia was just like the cream of the crop back then. And I don't know if you guys ever saw a documentary on that, but Russians, they were very. They were kind of proud of the Americans, actually, because Russia, you know, they had to win, right? I mean, definitely they had to win for their country, and they didn't get it done. But they saw the way the U.S. was celebrating and all the joy they had. And I think it it's a pretty cool story, but yeah, I'll never, ever forget that. The Miracle on Ice, man. If you guys probably saw the movie, it was pretty accurate.
I've seen the movie 50 times.
Yeah, Lefty, real quick, you still got Lefty, right? Lefty, I do want to know, though, like, what was it like when you were 14 going back to school? I don't know, you probably might have been in winter break at the time, but what was it like going to school the next day after that sort of thing happened? Was that like the talk around school was just the U.S. beating the Soviet hockey team?
Oh, yeah. It was, oh, yeah. It was, you know, it's a proud moment, you know? Your country wins, and it's this big-ass, you know, can't say that. It's this big, huge upset. So, yeah, everybody was talking about it. Even if you weren't a sports fan, you were talking about it.
That's cool.
It was that big of a deal.
Damn. Appreciate the phone call, Lefty. Please, 888-957-9570, if you have any stories about when you were alive during 1980, 40 years ago, when Team USA beat the Soviets. And also, if you have just your favorite memory at all, like where is, like even if you weren't alive back then, which you and I weren't, Kyle.
We're not.
Stephen Langford, Kyle Madsen in, by the way, just in case you're getting into your car now and you're wondering who these two guys are that are on the air. But even if you just have the most memorable sports moment where you just knew where you was and you're never really going to forget that. But we're taking all sorts of calls today on that sort of stuff.
It's one of those things where I don't think I will ever experience a sports moment like that. Like,
really?
I don't know what, and I was at the Niners Saints playoff game, Alex Smith to Vernon Davis. That was amazing. I was at the final game at Candlestick with the Navarro Bowman pick six. That was incredible. I was at game three of the 06 ALDS when the A's beat the Twins to move on to the ALC. I was there. That was amazing. But I don't think anything will ever have the gravity or the impact of that Miracle on Ice. Like, because of all the things we mentioned, all the stuff going on in the country, all the stuff going on between those two countries, and now the United States, like, I don't know, there's not a major sport that I think they would go into a major tournament where they'd be such enormous underdogs against a team that's as dominant as the Russians were, which is the other half of this.
The 650 here from the Chilton Autobody text line, I think, has an answer to that question.
Oh, drop it on me.
Imagine if the U.S. team ever won the Men's Soccer World Cup. How big would that be? I think you may not, even if you're not big of a soccer fan, like when the U.S. gets going, everyone is into it. And especially with the age of social media now, it doesn't matter if you like sports or not. You are going to be paying attention to that if they're in the World Cup final.
That's a really good answer. Yeah, because even when the U.S. soccer team like moves on out of the group stage, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think that's right, especially because there are so many soccer-dominant countries.
For sure.
That the U.S. would be huge underdogs. So, okay, I can rock with
like
that.
If England were to make it into the World Cup final, I'd go crazy. I'd go absolutely nuts. I mean, Team USA, I don't know. I'm of English heritage, you know. Got the parents who are from there.
Your folks are English. So do you support the Three Lions?
Yeah. Heavily.
Really?
Heavily.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, back this last year when
they were... Is it because the U.S. is not very good?
I mean, it's just how I've grown up. I grew up watching, you know, the U.S. team. I was like 5 years old when this happened, but when David Beckham got a red card and got sent off for kicking a guy in the crotch, I cried at that time during England's tenure. They haven't won one since 1966.
Right.
So when you got Team England who are trying to inch their way back, these next years are going to be good for them, but I'd go crazy. And I feel like it'd be the same here though for US. Like if the soccer team were,
I think that would really catch on
for sure. That would be the one comparable.
Okay.
No doubt.
I can rock with that.
Man, we got a few calls here, but let's go to Gene in Oakland, who's been waiting patiently on hold, 888-957-9570. We would love to hear from you if you're alive during the Miracle on Ice, which happened 40 years ago today. Gene, what's going on?
Yeah, guys, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm 74, so I was 20 when that game was played, and I followed it right to the end, and it's still... It may be still my number one sports moment of all time. I'd have to think about it because I go back to the 50s. But I'll tell you, Al Michaels' call at the end, do you believe in miracles? Yes, that's definitely the number one sports call of all time in my mind. So, and even if we were to somehow miraculously win the World Cup, I still don't think it compares because these are a bunch of college kids, you know, Americans weren't known for their hockey to begin with, and it was very much dominated by the Canadians and the Russians back then. For them to have done what they did was, it was a miracle. There's no other way to describe it. So one other point I'd like to make, this question about should we go back to, I think you were asking the question, should we go back to having amateurs compete in like basketball or maybe hockey? And I'd say absolutely not. That changed basketball-wise. As a result of the, I believe it was the 72 Olympics,
yeah.
The Russians stole the gold medal
yep.
from us, right?
Yep.
And we decided then and there, you know what, you're going to play those kind of games, then we're going to throw our best against your best. Now, I don't want to see that change. You know, the rest of the world's catching up with us. It's more competitive. But no, I'd rather see our best against everybody else's best.
That's fair.
Really appreciate the phone call, Gene. We do have to get to break. Real quick, what's your guy?
He mentioned Al Michaels' iconic call. And when they did Miracle, Al Michaels redid most of it just from like a transcript. But that final call, like they knew there was no way he was going to be able to recapture the emotion. So you can hear the sound in the movie change when they go to his original call because they didn't want to try and make
no
him
doubt.
Do it.
I mean,
it's incredible.
Look, being alive back in 1980, I remember when they went down to Sweden and I'm like, you guys are playing this like a throwaway game up in Rochester. Damn right,
who
Sweden.
Who we playing, Rammer?
We're playing Sweden. We'll go to Steve and Mark coming up next. If you want to call in, 888-957-9570. It is the 40-year anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. We'd love to hear from you if you're alive during that time. What's it like? Because we can't hear enough stories about that. And if you weren't alive during that time, what's a sports moment for you where you're going to remember it for your entire life, like these guys, like Gene just did, like said, he was 74 years old and he still remembers it like it was yesterday. Chilton Autobody text line 95795, 888-957-9570. Stephen Langford, Kyle Madsen in up until 4 o'clock on 95.7 The Game.
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.